From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
From tomorrow, Europe, which has its heart beating in Greece tonight, will begin to heal its wounds, our wounds. Tonight's no is a big yes to a democratic Europe. It's a no to the vision of Europe as an infinite cage for its people. It's a loud yes to the vision of the Eurozone as a common area of prosperity and social justice.
That was Greece's finance minister, now former finance minister, Yanis Varoufakis, following Sunday's massive show of support by the country's voters for his government's handling of negotiations with its creditors thus far. Greek voters gave Syriza the requested no on the referendum question of whether or not to accept the last offer from the so-called Troika of Creditors, the EU, ECB, and IMF, with a convincing 61.3 to 38.7 tally. Although Varoufakis had said last Friday that he would take a yes vote as a vote of no confidence in his role in the negotiations thus far, he resigned Sunday after the convincing no vote because, according to some reports, of bad blood between himself and some of the European negotiators. In particular, there was reportedly an acute conflict between Jeroen Dijsselbloem, president of the Eurogroup, which includes all the finance ministers of countries in the Eurozone, and the now former finance minister. According to a source cited in the Russian news agency TASS, Varoufakis' opponents believed he intentionally dragged out the negotiations in order to hold the referendum this past weekend. They said this created a lack of trust in Greece's main negotiator. For his part, Varoufakis said he would, quote, wear the creditors' loathing with pride, close quote. He pledged his continued support to Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras and his choice as new finance minister, Euclid Sakalidis, who has already been serving since April as the chief negotiator in the talks with Greece's international creditors. In our special coverage today of Sunday's historic referendum, we explore what the vote meant and what it may mean going forward with Richard Wolff, professor of economics emeritus at the University of Massachusetts Amherst and visiting professor in the graduate program in international affairs of the New School University in New York. We spoke with him via Skype from New York Monday.
In a remarkable departure from what passes as democracy in modern industrial countries, the Greek political establishment in power, in this case the Syriza party, which won the elections in January of this year and so became the government, they decided to take a major political issue, whether the Greek people should accept the very harsh austerity that the Europeans want to continue in Greece. It's been there since 2010. They want to continue it. Put that question in front of the Greek people through a referendum. Yes, we want to go along with the European plan for us, horrible as it's been for 5 years. Or do we say no, that we will not continue to suffer this kind of austerity? It is not fair. It has not worked. And to prolong it into the future would be to make the devastation even worse. It's very remarkable to ask the people to vote on such a thing. It is very dangerous to all the other governments in Europe who are highly specialized in avoiding all of such kinds of referenda. So it was a remarkable political decision. There was less than a week, basically, for the Greek people to be prepared. They were bombarded, on the one hand, to say no by Syriza and all of those who don't like austerity. And they were bombarded on the other side, both by the conservative forces in Greece, who used to be the government, and by the Germans and other Europeans who wanted the Greeks to continue what has been, after all, a European policy. And the referendum held yesterday, Sunday, provided a definitive, unambiguous 60% plus vote no, that that the Greeks will not accept what the European leaders have imposed on them.
And so you have so many countries around the world that are on some sort of austerity program or another. The global south is littered with that condition, and much of Europe as well. Even in the UK, they had 250,000 people or better out in the streets against austerity the other day. Yep. What are the implications for the for those other countries now that someone was given a chance to vote on it, and they voted no, and it looks like the government is going to try to, you know, work from there sync with that?
Well, I think it terrifies the existing political authorities. And I would add to the list of countries that have austerity the United States as well.
For sure.
So it's shaking up the government here. To tell you the truth, the Obama administration has been pushing, not in the public eye so much, but not secretly either, has been pushing the Europeans to come to some terms with the Greeks, much more favorable to the Greeks than what the Germans and the British want. The Germans and the British, who are the major players right now, with France a kind of a go along with it, and everybody else largely irrelevant, they don't want to do it. And the United States has been telling them, you're going to reap a whirlwind by not going along. You don't want to stimulate the development of a left-wing political alternative in Europe. Over the last 25, 30 years, we've either destroyed that left-wing alternative or absorbed it.
Right.
For example, the leading harsh voice in Germany against the Greeks is a fellow named Gabriel, who's actually the head of the Socialist Party of Germany, the right. Social Democratic Party. It's called there. It's a coalition government between Merkel and them, basically. And so he's, in a sense, the second leader there. And he, more than Merkel, the conservative, is the one beating up on the Greeks. So what you have is a collapse of the traditional left, either by disappearing or becoming absorbed by the middle and the middle right. And then, not so surprisingly, those who are left on the left without a representative move further to the left to find one. That's what happened inside Syriza. And the ability of a party like that to go from roughly 4% of the vote between 2010 and 2012, when austerity really hits Greece, to a vote of 35% in 2012, and now yesterday's vote of 60%, is a rise of the left to political dominance in a European country that hasn't been seen there for half a century. And it is going to have enormous effects far beyond the dispute between Europe and Greece, and having more to do not only with austerity, as your question rightly puts it, which is everywhere, but even beyond that, to the question of whether the whole development of modern unified Europe is a study in how capitalism as a system works, so that the opposition is not just to what happened in Greece. It's not even just to what is about austerity. It's also a question of the system itself. And none of that is lost on the Europeans, because Syriza is, after all, a coalition, many of whose constituent parts are on record as being anti-capitalist, right, as well as anti-austerity.
Varoufakis gave a rather detailed critique of the European structures last month. And the context is, you had the Socialist Party in Greece administering austerity, PASOK, and then you have Hollande doing essentially the same thing, and you had Labour doing the same thing in the UK. And so they all have to be shaken in their boots now.
That's right. Their worst nightmare is the following. They believed, and they did, as far as I can tell, they actually believed this, that their movement to the right, basically since the 1970s, if not earlier, was something required by realism. That is, facing the way that the capitalist world really evolved, on the one hand, and facing the decline of the former Soviet Union and eventually its disappearance, on the other, that the realistic thing for a socialist to do, and let's remember, they all call themselves, even to this day, socialists, that the realistic thing for a socialist to do was basically admit that in the struggle between capitalism and socialism, capitalism had won, and that the job of the socialist is to make out of the capitalism that won a less harsh, less inequality, less difficult life for the mass of people. In other words, the conservatives were for a harsh capitalism, and the socialists, if you like, were for capitalism with a human face. That was a phrase they liked. And so their worst nightmare is that the appetite for a real alternative to capitalism hadn't been extinguished with the demise of the Soviet Union, hadn't disappeared with the changes in China, hadn't accommodated to the notion that there was anything realistic about knuckling under to a capitalist inequality, that kind of position would not only survive, which I think surprised them, but would now be on the ascendancy. That's a terrible reality for them to have to come to terms with. And I expect most of them will practice the age-old ritual of denial. That is, they will pretend it didn't happen. They will pretend it doesn't matter. They will pretend it's about the peculiarities of the Greek people or something else that will avoid having to confront whether the accommodation of traditional socialists to the permanence of capitalism was a colossal political blunder.
Mm. And also on the ascent, you see, if you were looking at Latin America as a model, for example, the developments that have taken place there over the last 15, 17 years, you have some countries that play a leading role in the integration of that region that are avowedly socialist and not in the European sense, and that consider themselves constructing, and materially are in many ways constructing, a socialist economy.
That's right.
And they're integrating with the other countries, even right-wing governments there, economically and in some ways politically.
I think that's right. I think that that's why the thought of Europe handling this by denial came to me, because I was, in fact, thinking about Latin America. I mean, it's unmistakable there over the last 25 years. The popularity of Fidel Castro's regime in Cuba has never been higher. In Latin America, the decision to reopen diplomatic relations between the United States and Cuba is seen almost universally as a victory for Cuba, even by conservative politicians there. Here, you're not allowed to spin it that way, because that's too frightening for the American people to think that their government waged a 50-year-plus war against a little poor country and fundamentally lost. That's not bearable, so we don't say that in this country. But in Latin America, it's clear that Castro's notion of a socialist alternative gets picked up by Chavez in Venezuela, and now by Korea and a whole bunch of others across Latin America. And the way that's been handled, for those who pay enough attention to even know about it, is basically by a program of systematic demonization of Chavez, coupled by a pretense that it isn't happening, that there isn't a massive shift to the left. There's no way, for example, if you're serious in your analytics, to explain why the Catholic Church would choose, for the first time in its history, a Latin American person to be the Pope, let alone for the kinds of things the Pope is saying, if it weren't for the fact that the reality out of which that Pope comes, in Argentina, his base, but also in the rest of Latin America, is a continent shifting to the left, and a church that wants to continue to be relevant there has to make some accommodations, and that's what you see. So it is a kind of denial on the part of the rest of the world that doesn't want to see it, or again, making it somehow special to Latin America in attempt that it, to control that it doesn't become contagious elsewhere. But all of that effort about Latin America, isolating the left-wing movement there, is going to get much harder now that you can see very similar impulses playing themselves out in Greece. And let me also alert your audience to the reality that right behind Greece, with very similar political configurations, are Portugal and Spain in the immediate future, but also Ireland and Italy and Hungary and other countries that are going to be facing very similar circumstances and are now presented with an alternative way to move forward that literally didn't exist as a possibility in their minds as little as 3 and 4 years ago.
Yeah, and there are even all kinds of contradictions, say, within the UK, for example, with the Scottish National Party and the recent close referendum and the fight over austerity in the UK. Scotland gets hit hard by austerity, and if that becomes part of the program of the SNP, you'd be looking perhaps again at the breakup of the UK over the issue if London doesn't go along.
Absolutely, and you can see it in another way. There's a fellow named Corbyn who was thought to be an absolute long-shot, far-left candidate to take over the Labour Party, which is the number two party in the country, after the resignation of Mr. Miliband because of the poor showing of the Labour Party in the last national election. But this Corbyn fellow is making enormous inroads. He's having something of the Bernie Sanders phenomena happening to him in England and showing again that deep inside the Labour Party is an enormous wellspring of desire to see that party not be the party of Tony Blair, but be a party much more committed to a firm struggle against austerity and against the Cameron government that administers austerity in England. And so they will, of course, be strengthened by what happened in Syriza in Greece as well. And as I say, everywhere, the conservative governments of Europe are, whatever their public relations blather might sound like, you can be very sure that in the halls where they sit down and try to plot out what to do, they know that they've been outmaneuvered. Let me drive that home, because the European press, and it's fairly well echoed here in America, the European press has had a really good time taking their cues from the folks in power to present the new government in Greece as not only, quote, hard left wing, whatever the hell that means, but also inexperienced, ineffective, temperamental. It's a kind of, let's call it a soft racism that portrays Southern Europeans and Greeks in particular as being, you know, bouzouki mad folks, not to be taken seriously, kind of childish, you might say.
Right.
Well, here's the joke. In all of the maneuvering that the Europeans did to make the Greeks knuckle under, to make the Greek left wing look like it was out of touch with reality, what that vote shows was that the new young Greek leadership outmaneuvered the old Merkel, Hollande, Cameron, traditional professional politicians. It wasn't even close. They could not figure out what to do. And in the end, they and their conservative allies inside Greece were unable to stop a tremendous outpouring of a left-wing Greek population voting as a people now. 60% for a government in power. No government in Greek history in the last 70, 50 years at least, if not longer, has commanded anything like this support. So this, you have, what you have done, Merkel, Holland, Cameron, is you have enabled the development of a strong, wildly popular, far-left-wing government in another country in Europe. A stunning failure, because everyone who follows this knows that that was the last thing on earth they wanted to see happen.
You know, on that point of being outclassed, outgunned, or whatever, watching this government move over the last 6 months has been really entertaining in terms of watching them. It's like watching Muhammad Ali box almost or something. They have... They exposed them as, first they laid out the actual details, an actual understandable criticism of the existing European structures that rings really true, and it's universal to the neoliberal model globally. And then they went in and were willing to make concessions and said that the resistance isn't economic, it's political, then proved it by the Euro partners refusing to take yes for an answer, and then saying, okay, if this is your best shot, taking it to the people, and then getting this outcome. I mean, they are so thoroughly discredited.
Well, you know, yes, but I just came back from Europe literally yesterday, and I can tell you that the chorus of hostility to the Greeks, and to Syriza in particular, is the dominant tone in the mass media, certainly of France, where I was, but from best I can tell, even more virulent in Germany and in other countries of Europe as well, that the folks who own and operate the mass media, who are either large corporations or the governments in those countries, and it's increasingly difficult these days to find the line that separates those two, but in any case... Yeah. Their line is that the Greek people are greedy and that they're lazy, and they just want the rest of us to support them.
Right.
You know what it sounds like, and which an American audience can appreciate?
Welfare model.
It sounds exactly like Mr. Romney in the last election when he got caught in that fundraising moment, when he explained that, I forget the number, 47% or whatever it was of the American people are moochers, living off the, you know, the hardworking rest of us. This image that the country is divided between those of us who work hard and get taxed and those of us who are lazy bums and live off the taxes the rest of us pay, that kind of imagery, which cost Mr. Romney dearly, that is imagery that is being played out in many, many European countries. The Germans are simply overwhelmed with this image. And when it feeds into old, and by the way, often dangerous stereotypes about industrious Northern Europeans and lazy Southern Europeans, and the parallels there with certain racist imagery are so obvious, I don't need to go into it. You see a lot of that, particularly in Germany. And, you know, for a country with its history about how far that can go, you'd think there'd be more hesitation about going down that road. But they really don't know what else to do. They can't tell the story straight because that makes themselves look bad in terms of their banks and their government. So they have to come up with this nationalist self-congratulations as the hard workers and everybody else as the silly bums who live off credit. You know, and even when you point out to them, as I do in academic settings, that the only way the Greeks ever got into this debt is because German banks, more than anyone else, lent to them in order to enable them to do it, because the German banks thought that was a wise loan to make and that therefore the Germans are complicit. They have no answer to that since it's all in the records, but they simply choose not to think about it because they enjoy the self-congratulations that come, as Romney hoped it would with the American voter, that come from thinking of yourself as part of the hard-working majority who no longer is willing to sustain the lazy, good-for-nothing minority, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, we have a tradition of that here going back to the welfare mom and before that.
Exactly. Exactly. And you're getting the, I mean, it really is the same story, slightly adjusted over there, because they're talking about Germans versus Greeks rather than whites versus blacks or whatever imagery. But it's the same story with a slightly adjusted cast of good guys and bad guys.
They might want to remember that the Greeks were one of the few peoples that threw the Germans out of their country on their own.
Yeah, not only that, but that the Greeks cleverly and quite effectively re-raised the question of Germany, threw Germany's history back in its face. And that story, which I try to tell here in the United States every chance I get, is a story worth reminding everybody. In 1953, the German people were suffering under the impact of World War II, which they had lost, and that left them with enormous debts, particularly to Britain, France, and the United States. And those debts, some of which went back to World War I, which Germany also had the bad taste to lose, and therefore incur enormous debts. The Germans in 1953 went to Britain, France, and America and said, look, we can't live under this burden of debt. But more important than that, since we don't assume you care much about that, here's the next thing. You want us, Germany, to be a bulwark against the Soviet Union. Okay? Here we are on the border with East Germany, which is an ally of the Soviet Union, and you want us to be a strong counterweight to the growth of communism. We can do that. We can become a successful economic alternative, but only if you relieve us of these burdensome debts that are crippling our capacity for economic growth and development, which is exactly what the Greeks have been saying about their debts. Okay, all through 1953, starting in February of that year and ending in the autumn of the same year, 1953, these countries met in London, U.S., France, Britain on one side, Germany on the other. In the end, the German argument prevailed. In August, if I believe it was August or September of 1953, something called the London Agreement was signed by all the representatives of these countries. And here's what it did. 50% of the German debt was completely erased, gone. The other 50% was recalibrated to be repaid over 30 years. What that meant was that the annual amount of money that Germany would have to come up with was a tiny fraction of what they had to come up with the previous few years. In other words, Germany was relieved of the vast bulk of her debt and therefore went on to have what in Germany is called Wirtschaftswunder, which means in German economic miracle. Well, like most miracles, once you look into them, they become a little less miraculous and a little more explainable. One of the key things that allowed Germany to become the powerhouse economically it is today is that they got in 1953 precisely what they do not want now to give to the Greeks. And it's hard not to come away from the understanding that if you're fighting against something capitalism doesn't like, the Soviet Union, socialism, and capitalism, you get entitled to all kinds of things which you don't get if you're the Syriza left-wing government presenting the Europeans with a very similar story. It's very hard to come away from this without understanding that what Marx himself once called the old mole of class struggle is simply, showing its head above the surface of the ground once again and enabling us to make much more sense of what's going on than all of the spin put on by Merkel or Cameron or Hollande.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.